Welcome to EC Presents. I'm Alex.
I'm Jared.
I'm Laura.
And we are back with a brand new episode. It's been a long 2 weeks. We've got a lot of progress done in our basement here. It's about 95% done, I think.
At least the black tile is.
Most of the floor tiles are done. My game shelf is just, I need to fill it with games now. And we need to do our trim. And then, yeah, that'll be it. Then I just need to organize everything and all that fun stuff.
The hard part.
I think it's more a satisfying part. Because then it's like, okay, theoretically, that's done then. Like, once I get it put wherever I want and everything, I'll have my arcade set up, the ping pong table set up. We can actually host entertainment and stuff again.
Oh, are we talking outside the podcast room too? Yeah. I thought you just meant inside these walls.
Outside. Okay. Once we get done with this, the trim inside, then all that's left is the outside bits.
Okay.
And then...
then there's less of the tile done if we're counting the outside too.
Yeah, but...
our percentages are varied.
Luckily, we didn't give actual numbers, so we're good.
Well, I said 90%.
There's no context behind that.
Right, so. Yes. This has been a very big project that we're getting closer to being done. So much closer. But anyway, we are back. Also, we're going to change things up, our order a little bit for tonight, because spoilers, I guess, is the big reason.
Pretty much.
And because we couldn't come up with a topic before, like, for the first part of the podcast. So, like, oh, our topic will be about Guardians 3 with spoilers. But we're going to save that to the very end of the show. So that way, if you don't want spoilers on it, then you can just pause the episode, go watch the movie, then come back. I'm not going to say stop. I'm going to say pause. You know, I just said it. But oh well. So we're going to do that at the end. So we're just going to shift that to the back and everything else will move forward then. So we're going to start with books that came out within the last 2 weeks. Jared, what is one of the books that came out recently that you really dug?
I think it's going to be obvious from my history and what came out today. Titans, number one, written by Tom Taylor. This is the dawn of the DC. And this is the Justice League has disbanded. They have charged the Titans with the protection of Earth and everything. It starts out with somewhat of a cliffhanger with Wally West has been shot. And there's a piece bubble in there that says the bullet has already pierced my heart.
Normally, so, phase through, or yeah. You run backwards behind it to eject right. It.
So it's already pretty much killed him. Pretty much, so we don't know where that's going. Somewhat of a cliffhanger at the end. So it cuts away from that pretty quickly. The Titans are trying to find members. They reach out to Tempest, who was Aqualad originally, and they're wanting him to join. I don't want to give spoilers since this just came out and it was very good. The Titans are getting ready to set up shop in their new Titans Tower and everything.
In Bloodhaven.
And Titano, which is a giant gorilla, is attacking a nuclear power plant for some reason. We don't know yet.
And is it a cybernetic gorilla is what it looks like?
Pretty much.
Okay, because when I saw them fighting, I was like, that looks like... metallic bits inside.
Yeah. So I don't want to give too many spoilers or anything. Peacemaker shows up, and this is actually the first time in the comics that I actually cared about Peacemaker. I'm like, oh, what's he up to? You know? So it's Tom Taylor's writing has made him more... it's like, I love the show with John Cena and everything, but in the comics, he's always been like, I really don't care about this guy at all. And now I kind of want to see what he's doing.
Which I still give credit to the TV show for
it brought him to the forefront. And now it's, with the writing as good as this, hopefully this kind of continues. They can really piggyback off of each other.
And from my understanding, the personality that he has in this now is... a lot heavily influenced based off of the show because right. It wasn't the same way at all before.
I don't think so. I never read much with Peacemaker. He no was not even a C or D character. You know, he was just there.
Right.
And it's working with what they're doing. So
one thing I want to say that I really enjoyed this is the relationship between Raven and Beast Boy.
Same here.
Like they've matured quite a bit in this. And like, oh, they're doing that really well.
Right. You can tell Beast Boy is an adult. But he's still kind of fun-loving, you know? It's an adult version of, you know.
He's mature, but he's like the Human Torch. Like, he's an adult, but he still has fun.
Right, exactly. So this was really well written. The art is really good. I cannot wait to see where they go forward with this. Might be because I'm a huge fan of the Titans, but this is a really good story on top of that. So
I will say a very slight spoiler that I liked. They have the editorial note in the bottom. For the story behind Beast Boy's eye healing, see Tales of the Titans number 4. Like, they're like, eh, we know you probably are asking, like, wait, when did he get this back? Because he lost his eye in the Dark Crisis.
Yeah.
So, like,
maybe even right before Dark
Crisis. I thought it was in Dark Crisis. It was, like, issue 1 when Deathstroke beat him to the end of his life.
Yeah. I think you're right now. Yeah.
Because the rest of the Dark Crisis, he always had the eye patch on, which is weird, though. He had an eye patch when he was human, but whenever he would shapeshift, he'd have an animal to analyze, though. Yeah. Like, well, you'd think you'd shapeshift your face then at all times, right, too, but you've whatever. Lost an eye, so. If you can regrow an eye one time, you should think you'd be able to regrow it at all times.
Right.
Only his human eye was damaged. His animal eye was fine.
So, yeah, that was Titans number 1. First one on my list is one that came out this week, which is Tim Burton's The Nightmare Before Christmas, The Battle for the Pumpkin King. This takes place several years before the Nightmare Before Christmas movie. Admittedly, I don't know a whole lot about the stuff other than I've seen the movie. Like, I don't follow all the books and everything, because I know they've done several books throughout the years and everything. Like, I was like, well, it's number 1. I'll try it out. And I think for the diehard fans of Nightmare Before Christmas, they'll enjoy it. At first, I thought this is a weird time of the year for it to come out, but I realized I did the math. The trade should be coming out right around the time of Halloween. So, like, okay, this makes sense to do single issues now.
Yeah.
Since trades usually having longer shelf lives
and right.
a bigger audience. But it's a cool story. It is before Jack Skeleton becomes the Pumpkin King, and him versus Oogie Boogie. They're getting ready to compete to whoever's going to be the Pumpkin King of Halloween Town. There's not a whole lot to say other than that. The art is pretty true to the movie. I thought it looked very similar, and characters seemed accurate, and it has the previous Pumpkin King before Jack was in there, which I didn't know. Like, oh, that's cool. I just assumed when I watched the movie he was the forever Pumpkin King, but apparently not, so.
Apparently it's a democratic king system instead of just a usurp the king yeah, system.
Sort of thing, but...
And one thing I'd like to mention was it seemed like a young reader's book to me. Like, I was a little bored, and they kept saying the same things over, and I was like, I feel like it's for younger, and a younger audience might enjoy it more.
Maybe, or there's just a lot of filler to it, I think, of just like, oh, yes, yeah, they're competing, and Jack always wins, or, oh, now Boogie wins, and, like, okay, so they're somewhat on evil footing, depending on what they're doing.
They each have their strengths.
Yeah.
And I like to, like, it seemed like it was trying to encourage people to enjoy, like, the whole town enjoyed it. Like, they were all egging them on. Like, right. You guys are doing great. Yeah, great job, Oogie. Great job, Jack. Like, it was...
They all had their fans.
Yeah. It was encouraging people to realize that you have fans everywhere and, like, be gracious winners, too.
Yeah, and
good teamwork.
And looking through it again, I do agree with you with the younger target. Just how big the font is and how little dialogue there is within the actual book. Here, Jared, since you haven't read it yet, I'll pass it to you to look at.
What was that even?
I don't know.
It's the book.
That was
Jared. I was looking at the other way trying to figure out what that was.
So, but yeah, it's definitely, to me, it seemed, yeah, I think a younger, teenager style, I mean, even... For me, it's torn because, like, the content typically is, like, the teenage emo kids and older that, you know, when that first came out. So, like, I don't know.
I don't think that this was
That's what I'm saying. I'm very confused on who it's for exactly, other than, like, oh, you have to love Nightmare Before Christmas stuff. And even then, it seems kind of light.
I would say it might be geared towards kids a little bit.
It says all ages on the back.
The sentence structure might be a little... like tighter and less dialogues in one bubble. So it could be geared towards kids, but it still looks like the story could be, like you said, for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyone can enjoy it, but it struck me as, like you said, simple, and they kept repeating the same things. And after a while I was like, can you say it one more time? but it'd be good for, like, if you had a younger child, because they want to hear the same thing to get the point driven.
Right. yeah, that is the Nightmare Before Christmas, Battle for the Pumpkin King, number one. Laura, what's the first one on your list?
I actually went with Something Epic first, mainly because there is a slight, like, glimpse of the child in this book who's the main character looking at the Amazing Fantasy number 15 of Spider-Man. So when I see a little blurb like that and Spider-Man makes it into a comic, like, it automatically gains, like, 10 points. So, the story seems to be about a child who he's a little different, and I feel like he sort of has, it's almost the imaginary friends thing again, like we had in The Nasty the other week. But I don't think that he relies on his imaginary friends as much, but, like, he's basically just talking the whole time about how he's a little different and we're all a little different and you just have to make your way through life and make the best of your differences. And I'm not sure where exactly it'll go. I get the impression, too, like, his outlet for being different is drawing and kind of becoming a comic artist. I thought it fit in well, too, with our public domain story, where that's about comic artists to some extent. And just the fact that this kid was looking at Amazing Fantasy and, like, recreating Spider-Man a little bit, saying, oh, this gives me inspiration to have an outlet for my imagination. He says that he has an overactive imagination throughout the whole story. And so it was good. Something Epic by... I'm not even going to try these names. Oh, another thing that I thought was interesting, like, they literally used every single piece of the page. Like, the back of the book is still the last page of the story.
Oh, that's pretty, like, cool. Like,
that's where the to be continued is. And I thought that made it unique.
It is super full of content.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the publisher for that one?
Image, actually.
Image Comics.
Yep.
Cool. Jared, what's next on your list?
The next one on my list was Darth Vader number 34. I've really been enjoying this story arc.
Pretty much every time it comes out, you usually pick it.
Yeah, it's Greg Pak's nailing it right now. But that's the writer. This is the second part of this story arc, which is part of a larger story arc with the Handmaidens and everything. This is Unbound Force is this the title. And Vader has lost control of his powers and is basically destroying everything. Last issue, he ripped open the side of his own Star Destroyer, and, you know, him and the Handmaiden, they go straight to this island on this planet, so he can basically just let his powers go. And, you know, she stays close to him, basically being in the eye of the hurricane. And these rebels try to take them out while he's, you know, his powers are unstable and he can't control them, and chaos ensues. I don't want to go any farther than that if you haven't read it yet, but I've been enjoying Vader. It's been good. They're really making him seem menacing in this comic series. So they've done a really good job with the way they're portraying Vader right now.
All right. I have two more, but I'm going to do them back-to-back as quick picks, sort of. First one is Green Lantern number one. It's another Dawn of the DC series.
Oh, shoot.
Came out last week, Jared. That's why you should be here every week, so you can see all the tags every week.
I'm going to have to.
But it's a Hal Jordan. He's back on Earth. There's something going on with the Green Lantern Corps where apparently Earth has been deemed quarantine zone. Like, hey, lanterns, we're not going anymore. And Hal's like, screw you. I'm Hal Jordan. I'm going to Earth.
My man.
But yeah, he's trying to rebuild a life on Earth, not necessarily just as Green Lantern, but doing other things as well. And there's a nice backup story with John Stewart back on Earth as well.
Oh, nice.
Too. So it's the two of them on Earth doing their thing and going from there. Yeah, I read the first issue, like, okay, this is, for me, I don't like stories that don't take place on Earth. So Green Lantern back on Earth, that's my jam. So,
do we have any more at the shop?
Yes, we do.
I will be in tomorrow.
There you go. and the other thing that my real pick of the week came out this week, which is The Avengers number one. The previous Avengers series, I'll admit, I was not a huge fan of. I was like, it's okay. They're going too global and too celestial level. Like, I mean, when their headquarters is literally inside the base of a dead celestial, like, too much for me. But this one, they reveal that Carol Danvers, Captain Marvel. She is the new acting president of the Avengers, or she's the commanding officer. And she decides, okay, time to form the Avengers. And so she's recruiting everybody, which it's not really spoilers because it's on the cover. But she goes through recruiting Iron Man, Thor, Vision, Black Panther, the Scarlet Witch, and Captain America. I say Captain America because they even have a spot where it's Steve and Sam, they're training in a boxing ring. And Carol comes in and says, Captain, Captain. He said, Captain, Captain, because they're all Captain Marvel, Captain America's. And even Steve Rogers like, okay, guys, we got to stop this. The who's on first thing. That was old before I got frozen. No, we'll just, and they're like, okay, we're, but like, I enjoy that little banter back and forth between all of them. And yeah, it was cool to see, okay, why is she getting each person? Because they have their own strength that brings to the table. And I really enjoyed it. So I actually subscribed to it also because like, let's see where it goes.
That's high praise from you.
Yeah. And there's a surprise twist at the end that I don't want to give away a whole lot, but it is definitely tied to what the MCU is doing in the future without any spoilers. Laura, what is the last thing on your list?
I think since you went rapid fire, I'm going to do that too. Last week, one book that really stuck out to me was called Ghost Lore Number 1 by Colin Bunn. I admit it was a little cliche. Like, once you read the first couple pages, you kind of know where it's going to go, but it was still intriguing. I'm looking forward to learning more about it. The basic story at first is like, it gave me a little bit of Footloose vibes. Like, the small town reverend has the daughter who's a little bit of a loose cannon, and she's got to get her stuff together and that sort of thing. And there's some family dynamic with the daughter's just, you know, being a teenager, but something happened to the son as well, and he's kind of closed into his shell. And you find out as the story progresses a little bit about what happened. And yeah, just get out there and read Ghost Lore, because I think that more people will enjoy it. The other book from this week was called Good Deeds Number 1 that really stuck out to me. Che Grayson, Kelsey Ramsey, Rhonda Pattison, they were the writers, artists, and illustrators. And it was also a Scott Snyder Presents Dark Spaces issue. I'm not sure how many other books that he's got in this, like, Dark Spaces.
It's the only one that drew my attention to it. So okay. Either it's the very first or it's the beginning of that. Like, I haven't, okay. Like I haven't noticed before.
Yeah. But the name Scott Snyder stuck out to me too. And I was like, oh, well, if he has something to do with this, I'll give it a shot. Besides it just being an independent number one, which is usually my criteria. But yeah, there are three main characters who are kind of drawn to the city of St. Augustine. The one is a reporter, and she's coming to write about the Founders Day celebration. And the other is like a mother-daughter duo, and they're coming there to start a restaurant and kind of start a new life. And there's some other... I feel like these characters haven't intersected yet, but they're about to, and it's going to be... I feel like they've laid the groundwork for an interesting story, so I want to know what happens next. And, like, definitely get it and read to the last page, because at the end I was like, what the heck just happened? Like, out of nowhere, left field stuff, but
the hook.
Interesting. Yeah, the hook was on the last page. Surprise! So, if you're looking for an interesting kind of a little darker venue of a book, go look at Good Deeds. Ironically enough, Good Deeds was kind of a dark, scary book.
You're a fan of Scott Snyder, typically, yeah. You'll probably like this.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like terrifying. Like, it's just light horror to me. So.
All right. Jared, do you have any other ones you want to mention? Or
That Saga came out.
I forgot that.
I have not really finished it.
Batman, The White Knight Presents, Generation Joker came out recently also.
Yeah.
A new White Knight series.
There was some other thick Batman book.
Brave and the Bold.
The Brave and the Bold.
That came out this week also.
It looks like it's more of an anthology.
It is an anthology. I think it had four different stories in it. I don't have it in front of me. But yeah, Batman. When in doubt, there's always Batman that comes out.
Mm-hmm. I used to love the Batman, Brave and the Bold stuff, but... I don't know.
There was a lot this week.
Yeah, so. There was a lot, and I just didn't pick it up. I might pick it up tomorrow when I pick up Green Lantern just to see if I missed anything.
There you go. So with that, we'll move on to the next segment, which is our book club. If you don't want spoilers on this, then Jared, what are we reading in 2 weeks?
The Flintstones.
And that is the DC Flintstones. You can, just so you know, in case you look up multiple Flintstones, it is the one that DC did probably 5-6 years
2016.
ago. 2016. So that'd be 7 years ago.
This one was published in 2017. Novel, the series started in 16.
But yeah, it has Fred on the front. It's a more stylized cartoon.
Yeah, it's not the old cartoon. It's more of a comic rendition of it.
Yep. So it's one when they did it first came out, I was like, oh, that looks interesting. I just never got to it. And now we're getting around to it now. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what book club's all about.
Is getting the things that we meant to before. It forces us to read the things that we meant to.
I've enjoyed it.
Yeah. So with that, let's move on to this week's book, and that is Public Domain. I read it before. Have either of you read it before?
I read the first two issues. I picked them up on the shelf, but I never added it to my pull list.
So you missed out on the last
three. Yeah, I don't think I followed it after that.
What were your guys' takes on it, Laura?
It was all right. It needed more Spider-Man.
I mean, we kind of knew there was going to be no Spider-Man in it.
It had all the elements. I wouldn't have expected something epic to have Spider-Man either, and there he was. So you never know where Spider-Man's going to pop up.
I guess there's expecting it versus not expecting. Like, I would not expect Spider-Man in an independent book. So it's a pleasant surprise versus expectation, yeah. I guess.
There we go.
Jared, what were your thoughts on it?
It was pretty good. I enjoyed it.
It was definitely not our normal
read. Yeah. It was very, so much lighter.
It was like a TV show.
Yeah.
It was like a standard sitcom sort of thing. Not even a full, not even a full sitcom.
I would say more of a drama. I think it was
really funny.
Just a drama.
More of a drama show, yeah.
Yeah, I was glad it didn't seem too, like, expected. There was a twist with, well, I guess I can say, the fact that the son was having, like, some money issues, almost like he...
Gambling debts.
Yeah, that's right.
He's a gambling addict.
I almost wanted to say he got in with the mob. It's not exactly the mob, but, I mean, like, literal
gangsters, as his brother said.
Yeah. Like, he had a debt that needed to be paid, and his dad just straight up took care of it. And I feel like usually it's the child who's trying to save the parents, and in this instance, the parents were like, no, I got this kid. It's cool. And...
Well, yeah. I guess one problem I had with that is they didn't do a good enough job of saying, hey, this is a flashback now. Like, for me, I didn't.
Yeah. Right.
Like, it was just all of a sudden, like, wait, what? He owes money? Why? And then, like, the next page after, because that was a flashback that I just read. Right.
Yep.
Of him owing only $5,000 versus now he owes like $60,000.
Right. I don't think the art portrayed those flashbacks very well.
And it's usually even a now or then in the corner just to give some sort of delineation.
Yeah.
The only continuity I could tell with that was the one mobster guy had a full head of hair in the flashback.
Yes.
And then the more recent one, you can see his receding hairline.
Right.
I did not even notice that.
Which, I mean, I like that. I that was a cool little thing. For me, this book is sex criminals, but without the dirtiness of it. Which, I mean, makes sense. The writer of this, Chip Zdarsky, he's the writer and the artist of this. He was the artist of Sex Criminals also. So it definitely has that similar storytelling, just like I said, not as dirty.
Yeah. We're giving spoilers on this, so was not a big fan of how everything worked out by circumstance
at the end.
His neighbor who he's been supplying comics to and stuff like this, and always was offering to pay him for autographs and stuff like this, and the guy never took his money and ends up being the creator of a highly successful website, and he's like a billionaire and stuff like this, and paid for their office space. It's like, that was good plot armor, I guess.
I think that sped up the story for the next. I do hope they continue doing more.
Yes, this was good enough to warrant a sequel.
This to me feels like, I hate it, but like a volume zero. This is the kickoff to an actual thing. Is what it feels like to
me. Maybe if I'm looking at it through that lens, this was better.
Even. Yeah.
You know, some of that makes a little bit more sense.
To me, that's how it feels. Like, okay, this whole series set the groundwork of, okay, why is this public domain important? Right. What is up with this family versus those other families and the company and all that? Like,
right.
To me, this sets the groundwork in a not in a slow way, but a good, like, it was a right amount of build to it, I thought.
Then I would say yes. Let's go back for just a second. We really didn't describe the story arc at all.
Yeah,
basically, this artist has long ago had helped create a character. The writer basically had all the rights to it, but later they find out through some contract and documents that he owns the character, which is the character's name is The Domain.
It feels very Stan Lee, Jack Kirby. Powers.
Yes. Yep. And they learn that he owns the domain. So
the artist does.
The artist does. So they're going to this company who's been doing the movies, you know, almost like the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And they're basically saying, yeah, I own it now. You're going to have to buy me out or something.
So, and then the billion dollar company is like, okay, we're going to hold this up in courts until you, your kids, and your grandkids are all dead.
Right.
Like, you don't want to do this. Just take the payout. Let us buy you out and right. We can settle this.
And they do take the buyout for $60,000, but they now own the publishing rights for the comics.
$60,000 plus $2,000 every month while the big publishing company still makes comics right. Also.
Yep. And then the big publisher can still make the movies and everything like that.
And the merchandise, stuff, yeah. The toys, all that fun stuff.
Yeah, but the artist, that's all he wanted. He wanted to make the comics.
Yeah, and that was one of the biggest sticking points that upset me about the whole comic. Like, I was like, you could get so much more. Mm-hmm. This guy really lowballed it. And it was like he did it just to save his son. Because wasn't that exactly the debt he owed to the mobster guys? The $60,000?
Maybe. I'm not sure.
I saw a $5,000 in there somewhere. Well, but I think that was
the flashback. The flashback was $5,000. Right,
that was the flashback, but I think it built off of that $5,000 and became so much more.
Yeah, but to me, like, the dad wasn't planning ahead for his son to continue screwing up. And, like, to me, I have no faith in people. So once you burn me once, I'm going to be like, well, I got to prepare for you to burn me again. So it bothered me a whole lot that the dad was just like, okay, we'll take care of exactly our problems for right this second. And no planning for the future is the way I saw it.
Especially for me, the mom of the family, she's like, no, I just wanted you to fight for anything. You never fought for anything. Like, you just sold her away. Like, at least you fought a little bit and got something, I guess. Like, I support you still. Like, I think.
I thought she was okay.
Right, but I'm saying, like, I think she should be angrier. Also, like, no, that's it. Like, at least pay off whatever, you know, buy each of our kids a house with this money sort of thing. And.
Yeah, because the other brother didn't seem like he was all that well-to-do either. Although I got the impression that when he learned some of the secrets of his brother, he was like, maybe I'm not the family screw-up after all.
Right. And there are things in here that were kind of out of left field, but I really enjoyed. When the mobsters were doing the shakedown, the brother that was in debt, the gambler, he brought him to the other brother's house. Like, oh, we can beat you up now. And the artist brother is like, dude, I'm a pacifist. Like, I don't, we can just sit down, drink a little, smoke a little, and just hash this out over words. And yeah, the monster's like, oh, are you kidding me? Where you brought us to a pacifist? Like, that's the worst plan idea. I love the pacifist argument. It's like, nah, I'm a pacifist as much as I'm a vegan. If you put a steak in front of me, I'm going to eat. And then he throws a punch like, oh, I'm a pacifist until I need to fight.
Right.
Sort of thing. Like, I enjoyed that. Like,
yep, I did too.
And then how he solved the fight was he pulled out a gun, and then the one mobster like, dude, like, calm down. This other guy, he lost his family to guns violence. Like, he hates pistols, and like, that's uncalled for. Like, they seem almost honest thugs. Like,
yep. Well, I mean, I don't. Other than the shakedown and beating them up, I don't think they were in the wrong because the one brother did have gambling debts.
Well, I mean,
you know? They're still wrong.
They're just, not as wrong, you know, as
it's just there's like a layers
of gray,
right?
Shades of gray.
But so I just love that humanity of like, oh, this big bad guy's gonna beat you up. Like, oh, guns. And he's just like, that's his Martha, where he just melts down. Yep. And you turn out that the gun is just a tattoo gun,
right? That he got a convention,
right? Like, that was fun. Like, that little bit of humor in there. I was like, oh, that's nice to break up the seriousness a little bit. but still get the story across and everything.
Right. And there's some jokes in here that I'm like, that's got to be a joke, but I don't quite get it. Like there was
keep your nose clean?
Some of that, but there was one where they're looking at somebody that's online at a red carpet event, and he's like, he's always wearing the same orange suit, but in the picture, it's a black suit. Well, like, is the guy colorblind? Is, you know.
No, you see the elbow. It's that elbow right there. You're like, oh, you can see his elbow. I think I can see dad's elbow.
Oh, that's what that is. Okay.
Because you only see just his elbow of the suit.
Oh, yeah, I think
that was the guy they were trying to not draw attention to, and he's like trying to draw attention to himself with his orange suit.
Right. I think that's why he wears that orange suit, because it does stand out a little bit.
I get it.
But everyone's trying to ignore him, because isn't that the dad that's being like kind of pushed out of the whole thing?
Well, yeah. That's the original artist that actually the owner of the rights to everything.
Okay. Yeah. That makes a bit more sense. I didn't catch that.
Sid Dallas, I'm pretty sure, was that the dad who was being kind of
shut out.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought that was a joke of some kind. I'm like, I don't get that one.
Well, I take it that he's wearing the same orange suit because that's his only suit, I think, too. Though they're trying to get by. Like, no, it's not like I have multiple. Like, that's the only one as well. I like the secretary that reveals, like, oh, he actually owns the rights. My boss sucks. Gives away. She gets fired. So she flies cross country like, oh, I have nothing else left here in L.A., so I have to go.
And then they just hire her.
I mean, they kind of owe her.
I mean,
oh yeah,
they wouldn't have had the
the
chance for anything without her. So I think that's part of why she came there. She got fired, had nothing left, and she's like, "You owe me because I pretty much lost my foothold in the industry of doing what I love for you because I was a fan and I found this and told you."
And she was an aspiring comic book writer, also. That's why she took the job, because, like, oh, well, you're the legendary writer. You're Stan Lee, effectively, that created this empire. Maybe you have ends that can get me, you know, in the industry also. And the guy is an alcoholic jerk and kept, like, ignoring her, misogynistic, whatever, like, awful human being. And, so she gets fired. I think she knew she was effectively quitting when she took a picture and sent that to him, like, oh, technically you're fired, but you know you're done.
Right.
Well, I don't know that anyone knew that she leaked that information necessarily. I mean, like, Sid knew, but he didn't have to tell anybody where he got the information
from. Right. I mean, I imagine they probably figured out pretty quickly, okay, who would possibly have this evidence? Okay, well, it has to be her. Because Jerry wouldn't tell anybody, because then he'd lose his empire.
He didn't know what he had, though. Like, she stumbled across it, because I forget what was going on, that he was like, oh, clean up. Oh, that's right. They were doing an interview, and someone else asked her to find some old stuff that they could, like, reprint.
They wanted, like, old scripts or whatever for the press, for the PR junket for the movie itself. They were like, all right, throw out some old memorabilia, dig something up, and she found that.
Yeah, she dug up the wrong thing for that guy.
But yeah, I mean, I take it to this is an origin. This whole thing is an origin leading up to what's going to happen, what should happen next. Especially with the whole, we're starting a new comic book company. It's the father and his two kids that are doing it. The one son is an artist. The other son is a writer of sorts. Mm-hmm. And he's a failed.
The other one's a screw up.
He's a failed. Well, they're both screw ups in their own way. But I like how the father did his sketch and, like, oh, really? That's a little rough. That's a little dated. And then the tattoo artist is like, oh, here, let me doll it up a little bit. Yep. And, like, hey, that actually works pretty well. So it has the altogether satisfying, like, oh, what? Well, we had all the pieces. We just didn't notice that we had all the pieces together and everything.
Yeah. It gives the definition of an inker.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're tracing it. Oh, that's still important.
I mean, that's pretty much the whole thing pretty quickly. It was a very quick read for me, at least.
Yeah.
Yep, it was.
Me too. I was a little surprised when I got done. I was like, oh,
there was only
5 issues, right? I think
there was only about
115 pages.
Yeah. Pretty close to that. And that's still with some covers and stuff like that inside there. So you're looking at about 110 pages of actual story.
Right. Sorry if you hear Peter in the background, folks.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I promise he's upstairs like there's squirrels outside.
And we have 2 doors shut right now to even for them from coming down here. Yeah. Just
I'm impressed that we can hear him as clear as we can. But
yeah, it is what it is. It's not a soundproof studio. We didn't go that full.
We'll see what else we can do. But
yeah.
Yeah.
We'll see what else we can do to silence the beast.
That sounds ominous. No animals were harmed in this podcast.
I mean, like pacifying. He'll play with the cat or something quietly. Well, that's not going
to
happen.
I was going to say there's a chance he's loud because of the cats.
Maybe he'll nap with the cat on the bed.
I still think we should put him on the Spider-Man chair and I should just pet him.
Yeah.
We'll try that someday.
We'll see what happens. Yeah. Anyway, back to public domain. 1 to 5. 1 being off of 5 being great. Jared, what would you rate it?
I'd go with a 3. It was good. Yeah. And if they come out with a sequel, I'd be willing to check that out from this. But as a standalone, I can't go higher than a 3.
Fair enough. Laura?
Yeah, I'd go average. It's a 3. Like, it's a good read. It'll satiate you for a little bit. But honestly, if a second one came out, I might not pick it up.
I would say with talking to you guys, like...
It would be on one of our recommendations, so if you want to read it.
Yeah, any of my complaints are really kind of quelled, you know.
Yeah.
It was decent.
Yeah, we fixed that suit problem for you.
There we go.
I'm going to give it a 3 also. It's to me, it seems very... They're taking a what if the MCU was like this, is the way I'm thinking. I was like, oh, there's definitely a lot of similarities between what Marvel's been doing. Like, oh, we have the original writer and the artist, but we're going to change the names a little bit and try to add a little more drama with a little more animosity between them, which who knows? It could have been true. I don't know how much money Stan Lee had towards the end versus what, in theory, he was owed because what he created, but also you get paid to do a contract, you do your job. If it turns into something else, that sucks, but it is what it is.
Yep.
That's what contracts are for. But and in 2 weeks again, Laura, what are we reading?
The Flintstones.
All right. So with that, we'll move on to the spoiler filled rants and raves about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. But before I do that part, I do want to mention one more thing since we're in full spoiler mode. Have either of you seen what's going on with Amazing Spider-Man that's going to be coming out at the end of the month?
Maybe I didn't. So, was it number 25?
Number 25 already came out last week. Number 26 comes out in a week or two. I think 2 weeks, actually. They've been advertising it for a while now. A major character is going to die. Who's it going to be? It got leaked online, and then Marvel has since then confirmed on all their social medias of who it's going to be.
Oops. I feel like I should have known this, but nope, I got no clue.
So...
Aunt May again.
That would make too much sense.
Yep.
Another one that would make sense would be Mary Jane.
No, they don't need to kill her.
It would just make sense.
Is it Spider-Gwen again?
I don't think you'll ever guess it. Jared, you're cheating. You're looking
it
up, aren't you?
I'm cheating. I'm looking it up.
I'll give you the full spoiler.
Carnage.
Again, that makes too much sense.
Howard the Duck.
It's close to that. Like, it is.
Because he's such a main Spider-Man character.
Jared, I'm scrolling.
I'll give you 5 more seconds, Jared, before I just tell you who it is.
1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000.
Ms. Marvel. They're killing Ms. Marvel, Kamala Khan.
Oh! You did tell me about that. I just had no idea that had anything to do with Spider-Man.
It doesn't. It has nothing to do with it.
She
has not been in all 25 issues so far of Amazing Spider-Man.
Maybe she's in the Red Goblin. She's working at Oscorp, so she's in his universe. But
it might be Red Goblin, but I'm 90% sure she's not been in Amazing Spider-Man at all. And they're going to kill her off.
Right before the Marvels movie comes out there, it's...
Okay.
She's got all these TV series.
Right. Yeah, they're gonna kill her.
I guess she's
gonna bring her back. But the thing is, how is Ms. Marvel different in the comic books than she is in the movies, TV show at this point?
She's a little older in the comics.
She's an Inhuman in the.
That's it. Comics. Winner, winner. She's an Inhuman in the comics, but she's a mutant in the MCU.
So this is gonna be her mutant power.
So they're gonna kill her off as an Inhuman and somehow bring her back, and she's a mutant. That's what has been leaked for the upcoming plan. It's like, she'll come back as a mutant now.
Yeah. Okay.
I hate it so much. Mostly because it doesn't make sense for the story up to this point at all. She hasn't been in it at all. Why?
It must be one of the, like, offshoot
Spider-Mans.
It's not been
an amazing.
Is it Norman Osborn going to kill her?
I don't know.
He could easily.
I mean, that would be kind of a... good thing on his resume as a bad guy.
I mean, we're going to find out in 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's either Red Goblin, Gold Goblin, like one of the issues where Norman is being a main character, but because she's amazing. Like she's an intern at Oscorp,
right?
And whenever Spider or Peter Parker's been coming through and like working with Norman on their new suits and things, and the way they made the, I forget what the device was to send him back to the dimension where Mary Jane was trapped. Yeah. Yeah, like in fact, that's why I thought it wasn't amazing, because Spider-Man worked with Norman to.
Yeah, he's been working. He's been working with Norman, but not. But Kamala hasn't been in Amazing. I'm pretty sure she hasn't been in it at all.
I wonder if you just didn't know it was her, because I.
Or
I
she swear. Might have been like for one panel, but like there's not been an actual interaction though. Like she's not been part of the story at all. With Amazing,
she wasn't really part of the story, but she's been like a side thing because they're trying to insert her to get her ready. Yeah. But yeah, she's an intern at Norman's business. And at some point, she like stumbled across some of the things he had, and he was like, "Why are you in this area of my business?" And she's like, "Oh, I just got lost." Like,
yeah, to me, it feels very much like main Marvel / Disney is like, "Hey, we want to make her a mutant because that's how she is in the MCU. We want fans to know both same ways either way." And when they originally created Ms. Marvel. The creator wanted her to be a mutant, but at that point, Marvel's like, no more mutants because we're fighting Fox with mutants, so you're making them human instead, because that's our new thing, and no one cares about humans at all. No one has ever cared about humans.
Right.
Yeah. When I see Inhumans, I'm like, never mind.
Yeah, exactly. So they're making her a mutant in the comic books because to match the movies. Like,
I think if they would have originally had, one, a better concept, and two, better writers, I think Inhumans could be big today. But I think it flopped right out of the gate. No one cared.
Yeah, I mean, Inhumans is a lot like the Eternals, where, like, no one has cared. No one has ever cared. At this point, no one ever will care. Mm-hmm. I mean, the argument was made about the Guardians of the Galaxy, but James Gunn did a good job with the story, and people loved it.
Yep.
So it is possible to take an obscure character and make people love it.
Right.
But you have to have good talent behind it, and...
Right.
I think they just gambled on Inhumans and no one cared. And same with the Eternals. Like, nope.
Right. But I think Guardians had a little bit more appeal in the concept of, hey, it's just some guy from Earth whose dad's a half-god.
But even then, though, I'm saying they changed a lot from the comic books to make that movie work.
Right. Yeah. But there's a talking tree and a talking raccoon with a big gun.
That's the hook.
You know, he kind of molded that.
Right.
Eternals, it's a bunch of godlike beings with superpowers.
Yeah.
Who gives a crap.
Right. But they're not really alive. They're more like they're more like robots that are just living on the planet. And
Inhumans are knockoff mutants.
Right. And they always have been.
Guardians had more appeal in just that aspect alone when you explain it just like that.
Right.
You know, and I think that's what James Gunn took.
Yeah. So it just, I don't know, like this whole thing, like really they're going to kill her? It just seems, and they fumbled it so badly that someone supposedly leaked all this stuff, and then like just yesterday they're like, oh well, here's official solicitations and everything, like that was supposed to be a surprise. So either someone leaked it or you fake leaked it, and then like why is this, it all seems like corporate tomfoolery of like, no, just tell a good story, don't like admittedly I've not been loving this current Amazing Spider-Man series. But that seems like, oh, well, Zeb Wells is still telling his own story. Marvel's like, here, you have to make this happen. Like, well, either make him, either write the story yourselves then, or let him do his own thing. Don't just force that little bit of agenda on
it. Is Amazing Spider-Man sales down? Are they using this to boost those sales just a little bit?
No, because Amazing Spider-Man is like their top publishing series. That's what makes me also think that it's forced, because all they've done a whole bunch of the Disney tribute covers that's only been for Amazing Spider-Man, even though there's an Avengers cover, there's a Hulk cover, there's Infinity, like all of them, there's an Iron Man one that's coming out soon that's all tied to Amazing Spider-Man. So they're just saying, okay, whatever gimmick we want, put it for Amazing Spider-Man, because that sells no matter what, and we'll keep selling, and that'll keep outselling everything else. Like, well, that's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Of course it's going to sell better than everything else, because that's all you're putting all your eggs in that basket. So what's the best way to tell everybody that Kamala Khan died? Put it in their best-selling book, Spider-Man, not a book that she's actually in regularly.
Not in Ms. Marvel.
Right, not in her own book or anything else. Just force it into this, because that will get the most views all at once.
Then you can get your point across that she's not inhuman, she's a mutant.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. It just seems... Really, guys? Like, that seems pathetic.
Yeah, she'll be on the X-Men here pretty soon, then.
We still didn't trade out for the other issue, did we?
We haven't got a new one yet.
Oh, okay.
It hasn't showed up yet, so it is what it is.
Am I allowed to say that, spoiler?
That we got copies that had misprints?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, I guess heads up, people, if you ordered The Amazing Spider-Man number 25 on, like, page 5, there's a big smear down over Paul's face.
Some are worse than others. I went through all of our inventory. We had, like, 30 of them come in. Only 5 had damages, so we got those 5 replaced ones. They're on their way.
Okay.
But, yeah, it just, I saw that. I was like, you guys are fumbling this so poorly that... y'all leaked, and then, okay, well, here's the actual press release of everything that's coming out of, oh, no, like, well, the gravity is lost now, too.
Yeah.
Because the cat is out of the bag 2 weeks before it even happens. Like, come on, guys. Anyway, that is my little side tangent for that breaking news-ish part. So, Guardians of the Galaxy, Volume 3, it is the... third and final Guardians of the Galaxy as we know it. James Gunn and his team, they have all collectively said, as a whole, we are done. Now, we saw a post-credits scene where Star-Lord will return.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it seems like no more Guardians, or makes me wonder, are they going to do more Guardians, just not with that original crew? Like, okay, not with Drax, not with Mantis, not with Star-Lord, but we'll still have Rocket, still have Groot, still have...
Adam Warlock.
Thank you. Child Girl, I don't know who she is. Yeah, I didn't
catch who she was either. Sean Gunn.
Sean Gunn, thank you.
I can't think of his character's name.
The Mohawk Whistle guy.
Yep. Fake Yondu.
Fake Yondu. Fondue.
Fondue, there we go.
I like that.
I guess overall for the movie, what did you guys think of Guardians 3?
I loved it. I thought it was a great movie in general, and it was a great closing chapter to this trilogy.
Yeah, I thought it was good that it was standalone enough. I didn't feel like there was so much back history that you couldn't watch this on its own.
For a number 3.
Yeah.
Plus, it had Avengers Endgame and Infinity
War?
Yeah, Infinity War. Thank you. I almost said Infinite Crisis right there.
That's what I thought you were going for.
But it had those story arc elements to it. So it wasn't just a trilogy. It was pieced together from there also.
Right.
Yeah, I like that it focused on Rocket. It was kind of an origin story and a background for him. So if he's one of your more favorite characters, you would definitely want to watch it for him. But all the other side stories that used to be main stories are... They're there, but they don't overwhelm what else is happening. So if you don't know what's going on with Star-Lord and Gamora, it doesn't matter. Like,
and they within the movie itself, I think they catch the audience up enough if you hadn't watched that. Like, yeah. Oh, well, I was in love with you, but that's not you. It's a different you. Here you are now, but not the same person I loved before. It was definitely a different whole... I was getting all, not just different time displays, Gamora, but like a whole, it seemed like a brand new character altogether to me.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, she is.
I mean, yes and no. To a certain point, up until that time travel part, she was still the same person. And this one seemed more party, like off college feel is the way I got out of her. Like before, she was, you know, always subjected to her father. She had to follow his commands, blah, blah, blah. Very serious, straight faced. Versus this one, she felt a lot more expressive and entertain, like she was having fun with the rest of the Ravagers, like partying and stuff, and she was more like, I don't know, she had more attitude, it seemed like, to me.
Maybe.
And that's not necessarily a bad thing, it's just it felt like a whole different character, not even like had the same roots, like, oh, I'm not her. It's almost like a clone is what she reminded me of, that had some implants of the same memories, but not a whole lot.
Okay, yeah, I guess.
I would say so.
I thought that that was a critical point in her life, so she would have, like, that would be divergent and make her that much different, so.
I don't know, it seemed a lot more different to me, like, but I don't know. And it seemed there's also a weird love triangle between Star-Lord and Nebula.
Like, yeah.
I was definitely getting romance vibes from that.
Just a little bit.
of the, but he loved your sister, but you're the only one around now, and she's taking care of him. So I was definitely getting like, oh, well, like they're starting to vibe a little bit with each other, I thought.
Now, was that in, that Elseworlds? It was when Peggy.
Carter.
Sorry, I wanted to say Peggy Hill so bad. Peggy Carter, when she got Captain America's powers in that little mini series they had.
The What If series.
Wasn't Nebula... I feel like she had feelings for someone in particular. Was it Star-Lord in that set?
Only thing I think of Nebula would have been the... Which I don't remember if she was in it. Would have been What If Star-Lord was T'Challa. If T'Challa got abducted instead of Peter Quill.
Maybe that's where I'm remembering it from. But she had a different love interest in that. And I thought they were making a reference to that in this movie.
Maybe. But, I don't know. It's been a long time since I've only watched the show once. And nothing stuck real solid for me with the What If show.
Okay.
I was surprised how quickly they critically wounded Rocket, like, right out the gate. Like, oh, yeah. He's dying.
Oh, see, I thought that was the whole impetus of the story, so that had to happen.
I thought it would be having seen it, yes, but when I was going into it at first, I was like, oh, we're just starting off with him dying.
Right.
Like, what the crap?
Yeah, I mean, when they all said this is the last movie, I'm like, oh, are we going to start seeing them get killed off at this point?
I was expecting three deaths.
I was, too.
At least three deaths.
Yep, and the fact that there was none of your main crew got killed in this, I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah.
And the way they all wrapped it up by saying goodbye to each other, I thought they did a great job with this because they didn't close the door like some of these movies and TV shows when actors say, yeah, we're done for now and I'm not going to come back.
You mean Iron Man and Captain America and Black Widow? Like, I think Marvel's learning.
Shows like that, like Supernatural, you know?
But I think for this, though, Marvel's learning, okay, just so someone's done, we don't need to kill the character. We need to recast. Like, we don't have to kill the character off.
Even that, but what if in 10 years they're like, yeah, I'm ready to do another one?
Well, I mean, it depends on the role,
The role, yeah. There's a lot they could do.
Because, like, one thing that caught my attention was in the first two movies, okay, Star-Lord and Drax never wearing a shirt. Drax was never wearing a shirt. Star-Lord had that, you know, prison scene where it shows all his abs and everything. Second movie, Drax didn't wear a shirt at all. Infinity War, Endgame, didn't wear a shirt. This, he was wearing a shirt the entire time.
Yeah.
I think it's because the actor Dave Bautista is like, I'm 55.
Yeah.
I can't do this anymore. I think that's part of the reason, too, why some of them are done. Like, their bodies can't physically do that anymore. Too,
right.
Which makes sense. Like,
perfectly.
That's what CGI is for.
I mean, or recasting because people age out of roles. I mean, that's just... How many James Bonds have we had over the years? Like, you're allowed to keep the franchise going, have a different person do that role, and the audience is smart enough, they'll figure it out. It's a different person, different actor, same character, who cares? Like,
how many Batman have we had?
Only one, Michael Keaton.
And Kevin Conroy.
Wait,
and Adam West.
Batman?
I was going to say Adam West.
Wait, Kevin Conroy was a Batman?
He's
the voice of it in the Ant-Man stuff.
Sorry.
And he was in the Flashpoint on CW.
On CW,
Slightly different, but yes, I will give you, he is the voice of Batman.
But anyway, there are enough people that are smart enough that you can recast. It'll be fine. I think Marvel is learning to not have to kill off their main characters anymore because of that. I think
for the most part.
Because we still need Steve Rogers around. We still need Tony Stark around.
Right.
You can have a different actor do it. I know people are like, oh, well, this person was born for that role. That's the only person that can do it. No, that's the only person that can do it for now.
Right.
Eventually, someone else will be able to do it. It'll be fine.
Right. They're talking about recasting Harry Potter or redoing the Harry Potter series right now. I'm like,
They're redoing Lord of the Rings for crying out loud.
Yeah. I think they should do these all as a TV series. I think you could get a lot more content from the books or anything like that in those. But
I mean, there's the argument that can be made of, okay, we don't always have to do remakes. We can do new original content also. Exactly. But whatever. That's not this conversation.
People would rather see, but yeah.
Or remake bad things into good things. Have that as an option. Like, quit remaking good. We have this great movie. We'll remake it. No, remake a failure and make that good.
Right.
But it is what it is.
Yeah, it's an age-old argument for pop culture.
Right.
But one of what's some of your best things of this movie. Mine was Cosmo.
Cosmo is great.
Oh, yep. Yeah. I love that. Called her a bad dog, and that was kind of a running joke. And then when they released the she's a good dog, yeah. You know, that I thought that was written beautifully.
Just Rocket's story of saying, okay, we can rescue everybody, not just what you deem as intelligent life forms. Like, everybody has that power.
It really showed the heroism of your characters and.
Well, the growth of Rocket, not just taking care of himself.
Right, mm-hmm. But they're the guardians of the galaxy, no matter what the life form is.
Big or small.
You know?
Life is a life.
Yep, and I loved how the final fight with the big bad in this was just the guardians beating the crap out of him.
Yeah.
Every one of them was getting their shots in. I loved it. I thought it was perfect.
Now, I will admit, of the ending, I hated the fact that Star-Lord almost died in the vacuum of space.
Yeah. I thought they were just trying to throw that in as a little humor, almost.
I don't know what they're trying to do, because, okay, he dropped the Zune. He had to go back and get that. Okay, fine. Well, he's exploding in space. Well, we saw in the first Guardians movie, all he has to do is touch by his ear.
Yeah,
his mask comes across, and he's fine in space.
Right.
He didn't wear that mask one time the entire movie. Like, no. What are you doing? It's
like, that's one of his, like, trademark things.
It'd be one thing if they said, hey, we took all of your gadgets and your weapons and whatever. Which, I mean, they did search for weapons and Groot had it hidden inside. But they didn't say gadgets or anything. Like,
right.
Okay, why not? Guys, come on. Yeah. That was just artificial just for the sake of, now here's Adam Warlock's chance to redeem himself.
Considering he had that mask for a little bit in Endgame, didn't he?
Yeah.
So I thought so. So it wasn't like it was lost here in the last movie or something like that. No, he had it.
Yeah. Nebula having her super cybernetic arm, I don't remember that happening.
At first, I thought it was Bucky's
arm. From the
Christmas
special.
Yeah. Because Rocket got the arm, and then her arm was then different, kind of looking layered like that, I guess.
For me, best thing I can think of is nanotech firm when she was abandoned in space with Tony. That's the best thing I can think of is he upgraded her arm in that. And
could be, yeah.
I was like, oh, but it was so odd. It was like, oh, just tentacle getting into the controls and everything. I was like, all right. For me, I thought, okay, that's how she's going to die. She's going to be left behind controlling the ship. Nope, she's fine. Like, there's so many, like, oh, this is the point. Nope. It kind of reminds me of the one South Park episode that you watched where they didn't kill Kenny. Like, here it is. They're going to kill him. Nope. Like, I liked that. Like, oh, you're toying with me. Quit toying with my emotions. I'm ready for someone to die. And then none of them ever do.
That's the best way to leak spoilers. Like, tell someone that something's going to happen that never does happen.
Yeah.
So it's like, you thought you were so smart and you knew it was going to happen. And we tricked you the whole way.
I like the high evolutionary planet of all the humanoid animal thing.
See, I thought you didn't like that when we talked in the movie or after the movie.
Well, so there are parts about it.
Layers.
Yeah, there are layers to it. I felt the visit itself to the not Earth of getting in the car and then we finally hear the F word, F bomb drop in a Marvel movie.
Yeah, that was crazy.
The timing that it was used was such a, like, why even bother there?
Yeah.
Like, of just get in the car, get in the effing car. Like, why then? Of everything else you've done and, you know, with everything, that's when you're, like, really then? Of just getting in the car? That was weird. But I liked the gravity of, like, oh, this is a failed planet, nuke it all. Like, I like that part because that did show the gravity. Oh, he's like, oh, scrap test project, burn all the results, we'll start over again. So I like that standpoint of, oh, he is powerful and is willing to destroy stuff and kind of psychotic because he doesn't care, he'll just burn whatever. Like, I liked that part of the animal planet.
Yep.
I didn't like them being trying to talk to the animal beings. Like, I don't know.
Ouch, animals are beings too.
It just Drax needs to sit up. Like, don't lay down. Just sit up. Like that part. I was like, well, that's about 5 minutes of the movie we could have cut. It'd have been fine.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
That part was weird. Yep. Just to throw it in there, shoehorn in some Spider-Man reference. I want to say it was Spider-Man Unlimited. Hopefully, I'm not screwing that up. It was a cartoon that was like a season and a half almost, and that was dealing with the High Evolutionary also on Counter-Earth. So if you enjoyed the High Evolutionary and his animal creations, go watch Spider-Man Unlimited on Disney+.
And one other thing with High Evolutionary, who are two characters that he created in the main comics? It's been a retcon.
Rocket?
Nope.
Oh, yeah, he did.
In this movie, I didn't know if that was the case in the comics.
Oh, was it not in the comics?
Or are you talking like
two other characters other than Rocket in the comics?
I might know once you say it.
Adam Warlock?
Nope.
I don't know.
They're siblings.
It's not Quicksilver and Wanda.
Yes. Really? Yeah, they retconned them about five years ago.
They're not animals.
I said, what other beings?
Yeah, but like I thought the High Evolutionary like specialized in creating animals because I thought he didn't like humans. It's a dumb
retcon.
Okay. So can they just retcon it back to them being Magneto's children? I like that.
It sounds like they're going to be doing that also with the whole Ms. Marvel Kamala Khan thing. They're going to go that route also.
Good.
But yeah, about 5 or 6 years ago, they decided, oh, well, Wanda and Quicksilver, they're still related. But Magneto's not their father anymore. Instead, it's High Evolutionary that came and abducted, did some genetic modifications. So technically, Wanda and Scarlet are not actual mutants then because of that. Mm. It was dumb retconning. It was, again, the whole being so spiteful towards Fox because they sold the properties and mutants and they were trying to separate that.
They didn't want
to
use Wanda.
They're trying to separate that as much as possible. Then they just bought Fox, so everything's fine now.
Yeah.
Just throw money at your problems. That's my solution.
It's just the pettiness that, like, really, guys, why are you dumb? But whatever. Yeah, that's the only other thing I know. High Evolutionary was like, oh, he's supposedly the father of those two now, from a certain point of view. Yeah, it's dumb.
Yeah. Oh, we got to see an angry Ninja Turtle in this movie.
We got to see for a. A mutant Ninja Turtle. We don't know if it's teenage or not.
Right.
But it is a mutant Ninja Turtle. Or mutant turtle.
It's a mutant turtle, but it looks very much like the Ninja Turtles. To a degree.
It reminds me, it's very Michael Bay-esque.
Yeah.
When they put a turtle in the evolutionary chamber pot, it turned into that and it was angry. So.
And they killed it instantly.
They incinerated it.
I'm okay with that. That was fun.
For me, this movie... My favorite ranking from best to worst for Guardians of the Galaxy movies was the first one, the third one, and then the second one.
Agreed. The first one was so good. I mean, that was, to me, when I first saw it, I'm like, that's this generation Star Wars of a sci-fi film.
It totally was, yeah.
I mean, it was so good. Just everything about it was the perfect sci-fi comic book superhero movie of this genre.
Although I'm not going to lie, the second Guardian still had Kurt Russell. I thought that was really cool.
So. Yeah.
The second one was good.
The second one was fine.
Yeah.
I just like the first and third one better.
Yeah, same here.
For me, the second one, it felt too...
I didn't like that his father was a planet. It's like, how are you a planet? Like, that's just weird.
But he had an avatar that could impregnate beings all over the world or all over the galaxy. And
do the plant thing.
And try and do the whole killing of the sun. It was too father-son-based story, I thought. I was like, it was too forced.
I kind of think that's what the whole Guardians trilogy was about. You know, Gamora and her father, Thanos,
right,
with Nebula, and then Star-Lord, and now kind of Rocket with his quote-unquote father, you know, his creator.
Yeah.
So I think this whole series has been a lot of fathers
sins
against
of
sons.
The fathers.
Yeah,
there you go.
It's Fast and Furious. It's all about family.
It's all about family.
but yeah, to me, this was definitely a different tone compared to the first two. Like, this one was definitely more serious and depressing, like, and
tugging on your emotions. Yeah. The depressing bits with Rocket's friends getting all killed.
Yeah,
that was pretty rough.
But I think it was needed for the story. I think it worked really well.
It worked so well. Why Rocket is the way he is?
You know, why he didn't want to? I'm not this. I'm nothing to nobody. Like, because he got tortured. Not just physically, but like his family getting murdered and everything.
Right.
And everything. So yeah. It was good. I enjoyed it.
I liked Groot at the very end where he says, I love you guys.
And have you heard the reason why he said that?
No.
So James Gunn has confirmed that the reason why he said that at the end is because we, the audience, finally understand Groot's language now.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
We've assimilated.
Because like how Gamora finally understood.
Yeah.
We, the audience, finally understands what Groot is saying now.
That's
Is the reasoning behind that.
That's even more fun. So I got to say, I can't, I you know, 10 years ago, I didn't think I would ever really care about a movie series that had a talking tree and a talking raccoon flying spaceships.
And I did love...
just so absurd.
I did love Gamora in this part, in this episode, or this movie, how she's like, you guys are just making up what he's saying, right? He's not saying anything, right?
Right.
Like, I did like that. She was definitely the audience. I remember that standpoint, like, come on.
Yeah, you're just making this up.
You're just making this up, right? Like, that was a fun, little bit with that.
Yep.
So yeah, that is our take on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Soundtrack was good.
Yeah, it wasn't overdone with AC/DC this time.
Yes. I did like how each movie, like, they kept getting more and more closer to the modern stuff. Post-credits, we see the legendary Star-Lord will return, and he's just at home with his grandpa eating cereal while someone else is mowing the lawn. Like, he's being domesticated now, finally. He's done jumping from lily pad to lily pad.
Yep.
So yeah, that's Guardians. So let's go to the last segment, the true last segment of the episode, and that is our Heroes of the Week, comic book or otherwise. Jared, I'll buy you a little bit of time.
Nope, I'm good. I can go first. I'd rather go first because this is an easy pick.
All right, go ahead.
It's Darth Vader. You this week for the fondue joke just a little bit ago. That was a good one.
Yeah.
I'm going to think about that one the rest of the night. That was funny.
Whenever you see him, oh, it's fondue.
Yep.
Fake fondue.
It's just going to be fondue from now on.
There you go.
Because he's the cheesiest.
God.
And Laura's the runner-up for the Hero of the Week.
Yep.
My Hero of the Week is going to be my dad. He's been over the last couple weeks. He helped me build my new game storage system. He helped me with that the entire time. He's also helped with the rest of the basement renovations, but specifically it was just me and him that did that guy. And
I didn't notice it was on wheels.
Yeah.
That's nice.
And the clearance between the top of that and the doorway is so tight, but it's great. Like we, we have about a half inch wiggle. So we mathed that out pretty good. So it worked out. So yeah, I want to thank my dad for helping me the last couple weeks with all the renovations, but specifically he and I worked on our board game shelf that I think has turned out really well.
Yeah, it looks really good.
And it's not even done because I need to put more shelves in it, but it worked for the night. Mm-hmm. Laura, who is your Hero of the Week?
I think that I'm actually going to go with Kamala Khan since she's going to die soon. Like, I'll give her a little pity points there. But
we're going to quote die because they'll bring her right back.
Yeah, but she's always... been a character that I've really enjoyed. Like when I first started reading her series, I forget, was that like 2017 or something? She always gave me some like Mayday vibes, and I was gonna go with Mayday Parker as my Hero of the Week because it's May. But she's kind of my default hero. I think everyone knows that.
The first few volumes of Ms. Marvel with Kamala definitely reminds me of a young Peter Parker also. I definitely get Spider-Man vibes, like of the outcast, the kid that's in a world of adults and heroes, everything, trying to balance the private life with the hero life, and everything like that.
Yeah.
There's definitely a lot of similarities there.
Yeah, and I always loved, like, when you read the first few issues of Ms. Marvel.
No Normal. Yeah. Yeah. It was,
no, that was the second, wasn't it?
No, Normal, I'm pretty sure, was the first volume. Because I think we read it for the podcast, didn't we?
Yeah, I think you're right.
I'm not sure. Okay. I'll look into it later, but I thought No Normal was the second volume. But regardless, her first couple issues, like, there are a lot of, like, little Easter eggs. Like, there's a lot of references to The Simpsons, like, her embiggening stuff. And, like, there's just all this stuff that appeals to me. Like, I love running gags. I love Easter eggs. I love things that I feel like I'm special because I noticed it. So, and she's very, very good at that. And the fact that she's showing up in Spider-Man, I admit she's not doing great. I mean, obviously you didn't even notice that she's in Spider-Man currently, so she's not doing so great at being observable. But I also got the impression, too, that she's trying to be low-key. I almost wonder if she's some sort of mole in Norman's Oscorp. Whatever, but I'm not currently reading her series, so I don't know if, like, maybe in that they're mentioning, oh, she's over here trying to find something out in particular. I don't know, but she is there, so it makes sense that she could have some terrible accident at Oscorp because that's where her internship is. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, anybody in New York can die at any given time because all the superhero, supervillain activities that happen in New York City, specifically for Marvel.
You could get hit by a bus, too.
Well, yeah, there's that random stuff, too. But yeah.
So is Miss Marvel going to die and then just... I guess you guys don't know, but I'm just picturing it that she's going to die and then be reincarnated on the Mutants Island.
Yeah, that probably makes sense. So, if that's how... That might be how you find out you're a mutant.
For me... Again, right now, without having read any of it yet, obviously, it reminds you a lot of the death of Superman. Like, oh, we're going to kill him off and then immediately bring him back.
Now, wait a minute, though. With Krakoa, I thought you already had to have a conscious downloaded somewhere. Oh. Like, that's what gets uploaded. That's so since right. they don't yeah. know, or is that going to be another side note about how Xavier's being creepy as F because... He's doing all this crazy stuff.
Doing the Fall of X here pretty soon.
Yeah, maybe he's downloading non-mutants also. Maybe that's going to be the
hook. Maybe she's going to show up and be like, how'd you get here? And then that's going to be the start of it.
I hope I'm wrong, but it wouldn't surprise me if they're going to say he's downloading humans and inhumans, non-mutants as well, so he can regenerate them as mutants, so he can make mutants the dominant race then. I hope that's not the case, but I can totally see that being the thing of like, and this is how we get to that point of like, oh, even non-mutants are coming back as mutants now. And now they are truly the only race instead of...
Homo superior.
I hope I'm wrong. I hope I did not get that right, but I wouldn't put it past it. It makes sense.
Yeah.
So it can't be right.
Or maybe he's just going to do it to the Inhumans so they can just wipe out all of the Inhumans, but keep the characters.
Yeah. Maybe people will care about these guys if they're finally mutants instead.
Right. Nope.
Nope, they won't.
Yeah. Anyway, with that, we'll say, everybody, thank you for listening. Jared, for those that are sticking around, what are we reading in 2 weeks?
Flintstones.
See, enough repetition. We're getting it. We're good. So yeah, we'll be back in 2 weeks, barring any complications. We'll record on the final day of May. I think this will come out. That Thursday is June 1st, though, I think, so... It'll be technically the first episode of June, but it is what it is. So until then, we will see you all next time.
Everyone's tired.